Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, our interesting customers pop in to rent something, and we go through the films that they've loved across their life. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? How's it?
Hey, Rusky.
Are you getty?
Yeah, it is early.
It's early. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for popping in to our lovely, lovely video store here. I've got myself a Gad with me today.
I am Gad and you are Russell.
You are Gad and I'm Russell. Gaddy, when not working a shift at the video store, you make candy.
I do.
The Gaddles Candy Company. And my name is Russell, and I am the owner of the Bioscope Independent Cinema here in Johannesburg. But you and me are also in a band.
We are.
And we, for many years, have played in the band Short Straw alongside today's guest.
Oh, what a legend.
What a legend. So our good friend Tom Revington is going to pop in to rent something, and we're going to have ourselves a fat chat. So for all those folks who know Tom, I think you're in for a real treat because Tom doesn't necessarily do a lot of talking. He very much speaks through his art and his work. Aside from being the guitarist in Short Straw, he has now built himself an incredible career as a cinematographer, a DOP, however you want to call it, a camera person for the more layman. And I think you've got a chance to hear a bit more about him and his work. And what I love about the video store and our chats is that even someone like myself who spent years and years with him, there were some questions I didn't know, which was, you know, what some of his favorite films are. So we're going to get into that. But before we get into it, I want to make a quick announcement for all those that are browsing the shelves right now.
Attention all customers, this is just to let you know that the Horror Fest is here. This is for all our customers in Cape Town, because all the shows are going to take place at the Labia Theatre. You can get your tickets at quicket.co.za, or you can go to horrorfest.info. But there's a lot to look forward to this year. There's 15 new and classic feature films, 32 amazing short films from around the world. They always do the Rocky Horror Picture Show. There's a special old school 16mm film projection of Tom Browning's 1932 classic Freaks. The much talked about Terrifier 3. The 50th anniversary screening of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So there's lots to enjoy. So that's the Horror Fest, which will take place at the Labia Theatre in Cape Town. Tickets at quicket.co.za or go to horrorfest.info.
Our friend Ryan, oh my God, what's his name? Dream Kid. We met him through Fabian. He's got a song on the Terrifier 3 soundtrack.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He's like, I got 6,000 Shazams for my song yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then afterwards, myself and Gaddy are going to have a little chat.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have ourselves a Tuesday episode.
And there is a reason.
There is a very good reason. Usually on Tuesdays, we have ourselves what we call the clerk's chat, which is just us as people who work behind the counter of the video store. That's people like myself, Gad, Cole, Graham, Marigold, Perrin. And that didn't happen on Tuesday. On Saturday night, I was treated to my bachelor's.
Russell's getting married.
I am. And I've said it before, and just for those who don't know, this is obviously somewhat an official podcast of the Bioscope, our cinema here, but it's also a very personal thing. And so sometimes these personal things will get in the way of our personal time where we record this podcast. So on Saturday night, we celebrated my bachelor's. And it was lovely, and we'll talk more about it after Tom visits. But I needed Sunday to recover. And then on Monday, where we usually record our clerk's chat, which then comes out on Tuesday, We had ourselves a nice big event at the Bioscope. So there was just no time. So sorry for not releasing that Tuesday episode, but here we are. So this is a start of a series of chats that I want to have. Tom is the first of a few, where I want us to get a little more into the nuts and bolts of different people's careers in the film industry. You know, we've had a lot of guests, which are, you know, comedians and actors and things like that, and that's always fun and interesting. But I think people need to realize, what are the other jobs that exist in the film industry? It's not, you don't just have to be the director.
Yeah.
And I think Tom is a good example of, you know, if you have this passion for photography and sort of visual arts, perhaps you'd be good as a DOP and what that takes. So I'm excited for Tom to visit and for us to chat. And future guest episodes that will come out are going to be this more kind of hands-on kind of crew series or film industry series. I don't know what we can call it, but we'll give it a good name.
Behind the Lens.
Behind the Lens. That's a good one. So let's get into it.
Cool.
All right. Okay. This is our good friend Tom popping in to rent something.
Hi, Russell.
Hey, Tom.
Hey. Russ.
How are you, man?
Good, and you? It's so funny to hear you so clearly through this wonderful microphone.
So eloquently. How are you doing, bud?
I am good. Thank you. Had a good weekend.
Yeah, you came to South Africa for a friend's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And was it a magical wedding?
It was fairly magical. It's good to hang out with all the friendses for so long. You know, I haven't seen them in ages. And yeah, it's good to see everybody. You know, how weddings bring everyone together. It was fun. It was glorious. Heartwarming.
It's always nice to have you come out, because you do occasionally come now for work jobs.
I do.
And it's always lovely to see you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the things going on in your life. Have you've got a film coming up, hey? Or what you're going to be doing in South Africa soon?
Yes. Well, anyone who's listening to this who doesn't know who I am.
Yeah. Well,
I'm Tom Rivington.
Okay. Let's go back. Let's go back a bit. You played in Short Straw, mm-hmm. and for many years we've traveled the country and the world, playing in our band. And I think at the start of the band, I was the guy that was more often taking photos to
yes.
some degree. You were in film school.
Yes, I was in film school, yeah.
When we started.
Mm.
And then slowly but surely, you took more and more photos of of the trips as we were going. And I could see that photography was certainly your passion.
Yeah.
And something that you were excited about. And then it was very cool to then see you become more and more of a cinematographer.
Yeah, yeah.
A director of photography.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I think I did photography from quite young. I remember having a film camera that I found randomly. And my dad, you know, put some film in for me and taught me how to use it. It was like a little SLR kind of thing. And I remember from then, like, always like, oh, I dig this. This is fun. This is really nice.
And it was just so cool to see your photos get better and better.
Oh, thanks.
And do more and more. No, and then we knew that's what you were going to do in your life.
Yeah.
And there was this really, I think, quite an important moment in the band where we had to, as a whole band, as Short Straw, we had to make certain decisions about our paths and what we were going to do. And it was very interesting that for someone like myself, I can run the Bioscope and play a show, because I can see something coming. I can manage it. I can make sure staff are there or prepped or ready.
Mm-hmm.
I don't physically have to be at the Bioscope every day, every night.
Yeah.
But for you to be a camera person,
mm-hmm.
you have to be there. It's got to be your fucking eye
looking
through the lens. So so that immediately makes your job significantly different.
Yeah.
To the rest of us.
Yes.
And we needed you to be able to pursue your career, because we wanted that.
Yeah, for sure.
You.
Yeah.
We were booking shows months in advance where your jobs might come weeks in advance.
Yeah, it was tricky. And it's also tricky, like, you know, giving up a 5-day shoot because you can't make one of those days. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, I can make one of them, or, you know, I can make 4 days and not one. But yeah, I guess, you know, universe works how it works.
Yeah, and so it was. What was lovely is that we then allowed for that, and we want we respected the fact that you needed that time.
I need to fucking pay rent, mate.
Yeah. No, exactly. And so then we just saw your career take off at that point, where you were able to go and do those things. We brought in the lovely Zam to fill in for the band.
Yeah.
And whenever you're in town, it's always lovely to have you jump on stage. And,
lovely
and
to see your faces.
Join.
And mess up some of the songs.
Yeah. But let's talk about... So how does it work for you? What do you call yourself?
Director of photography, DP, DOP, cinematographer. I don't know. I think the modern world has got a bit wanky in terms of whatever it is. It's DP, I guess. Director of photography, like, you know, collaborate with the director and make sure the visuals are there and, you know, get the director's vision out onto the screen. That's basically what I do.
And what is most of the stuff that keeps you busy? It's commercials, eh?
So, yeah, my career is mainly made up of commercials and music videos. And I'm pushing more and more to get into narrative, as many people are. I think it's, you know, a whole nother world. It is. And also just, you know, from coming from loving films and growing up and being like, oh, man, I want to make films one day. Commercials are great and I love them. And there's always like something different. So is music videos, but it's completely different mediums. And I really do want to explore more narrative and, like, you know, long form. But yeah.
Have you had the chance to shoot a film?
Yes. So I've shot a couple shorts. I shot... two shorts in LA. I've just recently shot a feature in Austria.
Yeah.
Which is great. So
let's talk about that one.
Yeah.
Well, this is the World War II one.
Yes, in World War II in Austria, which is interesting because that's, you know, the Nazi side. Yeah, and it's a really beautiful story about a woman who lives by herself. Her husband has been off to war for 2 years. She presumes he's dead because there's no communication. Yeah, a British prisoner of war pitches up on her front doorstep injured. And she's kind of, you know, forced to make this decision. You know, she's quite isolated up in these mountains. And she's forced to make a decision, you know, does she look after him? Does she report him? Does, you know, and it's a beautiful story about, like, human connection and, you know, the other side of right and wrong, like...
Sure.
You know.
Oh, so she's German.
She's German.
She's
Austrian.
She's of the German.
Well, yes.
She's a sort of, in theory, would sort of lean to Nazi.
Exactly. Her husband is on the German front lines fighting, or dead, has died on the front lines.
Okay.
And.
Was this based on a play?
It was, actually.
Okay.
It
feels playish.
Yes. It's interesting you say that. Why do you say that?
Just because these small movies that often take place in one location have often been adapted from plays.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a film that's currently on Netflix called His Three Daughters. I don't know whether you've seen it.
No, I haven't.
And it's a very cool, like, indie New York drama.
Okay.
Three daughters have all come together and pretty much the whole movie takes place in the apartment when they're looking after their dad who's about to die from cancer. It feels like it's a play.
That's,
you know,
great.
In
That's
New
a
York,
great,
there's a thriving...
Very sharp observation. Russell.
Yeah, thanks.
But yeah, it's cool. But I must watch it out. What's it called? Three?
His Three Daughters.
His Three Daughters. I'm going to watch
Elizabeth
it.
Elizabeth Olsen and a whole bunch.
It is. I mean, it is based on play. And actually, it was written by a South African.
Okay.
Jenna Ramos.
Okay.
Who also stars in it. And then it's directed by her very good friend, Josette Eels, who's also South African.
Yes. Josette Eels is a name that rings bells.
Yes. So she was an actress here. She moved to LA a number of years ago. That's where we met. So we met in LA through a mutual friend. Always chatted film, always chatted story. She's a lovely, lovely human, just like very open and loving and warm. And I get this message one day, it's quite funny. She sent me a message going, hey, would love to shoot a film. Are you available? Are you keen? And I said, yeah, sure. I thought she was like, do you want to take a weekend, shoot a short film in LA over a few days?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'm down.
Cool. That's what you're kind of more used to.
Yeah. You know. And then, anyways, as we chatted, I was like, oh, this is feature length. This is
a biggie.
Yeah, it's a biggie. And it's in Austria. That's not a short film. Which is like, I mean, as soon as I read the script, I was just like blown away. From someone who hasn't shot any narrative, long form, whatever, I've read scripts and I've gone through scripts, and some people always go, oh, when you know, you know. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Sometimes you read a script and you're like, I get it, but this doesn't make sense. Or I don't feel this. Or I didn't feel that connection. I remember starting to read that script. I read in one go, couldn't put it down. And at the end of it, I was like, wow, okay, that's great. I want to make this film. Like,
what is the movie called?
It's called Mein Soldat. Mein Soldat. Yeah. So it's all in German.
Yeah.
Obviously English parts are English parts, but yeah, it's a really beautiful story about human connection. I don't want to say too much.
Yeah, but no. It's beautiful when it comes out. What do you think the difference is when it comes to shooting a feature? Like, how is that different? Is it just your energy, your presence? Like, what is the difference?
I think it's, for me, what I've learned in this film is the scope of it. You know, it's remembering whatever. We had like 144 scenes, you know, each scene's broken down to. So really having each scene in your head, how they connect, where they connect, the continuity, the emotion, the feeling of how they flow into each other. Because obviously, like, you know, your shooting schedule is completely stuffed because of certain...
And it's all in different places.
I mean...
Right? That's the hardest part of, it is, of a film.
Exactly. So
you could shoot the last scene first.
Which we literally did. On because of actor availability, some continuity on certain, you know...
Certain reasons.
We ended up having to shoot the last scene on the first day. And the last scene... Sorry, the first scene on the last day.
Yeah.
So just to really get in, like, you know, we had an amazing team. The first AD, Cameron, she was absolutely incredible. She was, you'd be like, hey, when does this happen? She's like, oh, scene 57, boom. And she'd just like have it in her head. It's like,
because I was about to say, this doesn't have to rest in your head.
No, I mean, that's what I love about films.
You...
It's very collaborative. You know, it's like, it's, everyone has to be on the same team and everyone focusing on the big picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, always making decisions for the story, you know, like what is going to help the story be told the most effective way. And that's something I found incredible working with Josette. It takes a lot of trust from someone, but then you get everything, you know. So it was amazing, you know, for like Josette going... She's very like energy and feeling based, so she'll be like, she keeps saying, I'm not technical, but as soon as we like look at a lens or a light or something, she'll be like, it feels like this or it needs to feel like this. And I think we got on the same wavelength pretty quickly. Yeah, and just that trust and always putting all the ideas on the table and just trusting that the best one will be the one left.
Because you as the DP, the director of photography, you could just go, yes, boss, you want that? Cool. You know, I'm just saying, like, that job could be a very, like, you want to go in closer? Cool, going in closer.
Yeah.
Just this technical person that makes it happen. But I'd imagine the good ones in history and in the world are the ones that not fight back, but have their own personality, where on set you'd say, let's do it like this.
Yeah,
how about we do that, right?
Yeah. It is a huge collaboration, It's like, you know, and I guess everyone has their different styles. Some, you know, directors know exactly what they want, but it is like that. I always find great work always comes from collaboration.
And you know, you felt that in moments where you've been able to...
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, like, you know, just talking from the looks to the, I don't know, angles, the coverage, you know, like... When you're blocking a scene and you have two characters in a space and they move around a lot, like, where do you want to see them? How do you want to see them? Do you want to be down in their eyeline? Do you want to be profiled? Do you want to be with them in that moment on a wider lens, close and intimate? Do you want to be observational and a little further back? Like, whose story are we watching in the scene? Whose kind of point of view are we with? Like,
because if you get a little too close to the one, you could come out of this in the edit going, oh my God, we don't have this person's story. We never never covered them properly.
Yeah, or just, yeah, exactly like that. Or just, you know, just knowing that, you know, like you want the point of view of someone on in that scene, or is it, you know, observational. So these are all discussions that I really loved kind of getting into the weeds with Jose, because it's like, yeah, it was amazing. It was an incredible journey.
This is the first feature. But I mean, how many commercials would you say you've done by now?
I don't know, 200 plus maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and you've worked with some incredible directors, because some of these directors in between big famous Hollywood movies are doing commercials, because also it keeps them fresh, gives them extra pocket money.
Yeah, no,
you worked with the dude from Greatest Showman.
Yes, I did. Michael Gracie. Yeah.
Michael Gracie, the director lovely of man. Greatest Showman. Yeah.
Very, very lovely man, and very incredibly talented and inspiring.
We have to talk about the Robbie Williams movie. So okay. We chatted the other day, and I just would love to just repeat the story.
Yeah,
we've spotted it as the video store, that there's this movie coming out, and we spoke about it in an episode a while back called Better Man.
Yes.
Where it's a biopic. Yes. I don't know which one is the best pronunciation, of Robbie Williams, played by Robbie Williams, voiced by Robbie Williams.
Yep.
But instead of him,
it's
a monkey.
Yeah.
It's a like Planet of the Apes CGI monkey. And it's played at a couple of festivals, and it's gotten some people going, what the fuck? This is crazy.
Amazing, yeah.
But we haven't seen a poster as of yet. We haven't seen a trailer. You got shown scenes.
I literally, I was lucky enough when we were filming in Cape Town. He was like, yeah, do you want to watch a scene from this? And I was like, yes, of course.
Fuck yes.
And it was an incredible, incredible scene. I don't want to give too much away, but what was spectacular about this scene is that they shut down Regent Street in London for 5 nights or something.
Okay.
Which is, I mean,
I kind of know London, but I don't know it that
Regent
well.
Street's like the main, like, high street of London. Like, it is huge. Like, you don't know, you can't just shut down Regent Street. Like, it's, I don't think it's ever been done. It's like,
okay.
So, they managed to do that for five nights with a cast of hundreds of people, like a big musical number in Regent Street. And it is absolutely mind-blowing. It's incredible. It's just, I watched it and I was just like gobsmacked. I was like,
was it like
wow.
a musical number?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Because with Robbie Williams, it makes sense.
It is it's a musical, you know, musical.
Have you seen the Netflix series on him? On Robbie Williams?
No, I haven't. No.
It's so great. You'd love this. I think he's in LA at this point, where he's relatively unknown.
Yeah.
He never quite like cracked America,
but
was obviously super famous in the UK. And they obviously shot it over a series of a few days, but they made a very interesting decision. Basically, they went back across his life.
Yeah.
So they went through all these like moments in his life. But the device of him talking is him on his bed, basically in his underpants.
Oh, I've seen a little
bit
of this. Yes,
watching off a laptop.
Sorry, I have. I've watched, I think, 2 episodes because I'm not sure, but I know Michael Gracie was involved in that.
Oh, he could have been. Okay.
I know he was because I know they're quite close, I think. Yeah, which
is so great. It's such a cool decision where it's like, hey, man, you want to get this guy vulnerable, being himself, comfortable.
Yeah.
That guy comfortable is him in his underpants.
Yeah.
Like on a bed.
Totally.
Which is so cool.
No, amazing.
Okay. But so you got that chance. What are some of the other encounters? Worked with Beckham at one point.
Yeah. I shot with David Beckham. I shot with Sanya, the footballer. A couple of footballers. I mean, working in the UK, you realize a lot is based around footballers.
Yes.
You know? Fair enough. Shot with a few different, who else have I shot with? I've got a terrible memory when I'm put on the spot like this, but yeah. I mean, just working with some really incredible unknown talent and crew.
Yeah.
You get to see some amazing talent just working the day to day. It's amazing.
Yeah. What are some of the, the lessons you've learned? Like, pretend I'm a young cinematographer. Like, what would be the advice you pass on?
It's tricky. I mean, just keep going. My biggest thing is filmmaking is very much collaborative.
Yeah.
And I think there's no real space for ego.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've worked with some really big directors, and what's been very humbling and eye-opening is they turn around and go, well, what do you think? And they want your ideas, they want your vision, they want to see. And it's amazing that, you know, some of that caliber could be like, yeah, you made the decision, what do you want? Like, the reason I got you is to do this. So
yeah,
what's your...
I don't want you to just follow my...
Yeah, so I think I've taken that, you know, hugely. And I do that with crew as well. Like, you know, I don't just want a crew that can put up a light and set a dolly and, you know, move this and do that. Like, I want to know, like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'd love to do. How do you think we can achieve this? How do we, you know, and it's the more you play as a team, the more people you get on your side, the more fun you have, the more rewarding it is for everybody.
Yeah.
And you get the best ideas to kind of land on top, you know.
Yeah. It's,
I'm not one for ego at all. I don't like, I think big egos shut off a lot of creative avenues. I think they block off a lot. Yeah, I just don't find it very conducive to,
especially if it is something that needs everyone to, you know, pull their weight. Mm. How do you cope with the energy of it all? Because that, to me, like seeing you go, like watching you just like go off to the races, I was like, how the fuck do you keep up? Because the whole thing I keep saying, especially with photography, is like someone's got to photograph that sunrise. So that means you've got to be there.
Yeah,
to physically go to that place. You got to stand in that field. You got to, you know, if you're shooting out in the desert, it's like you got to be in the fucking desert.
Yeah, totally.
And unlike the actor,
who
might have the luxury of being in their trailer until it's time, and then they just step up and do it.
Yeah,
you're a little more on the ground
for sure. I mean, listen, actors have an incredibly hard job.
Sure, but no, like, because then they've got those 5 minutes, they have to show up.
They have to bear it all,
because everyone else
in front of everybody.
Yeah.
Be open to mistakes. Be open to, you know, I think being an actor is incredibly tough, and it, you know, everyone goes, oh, actors in their trailers and blah blah, but actually, that is the thing we're watching, and that has to be.
No, I get that.
And the energy has to be. I mean, it's incredible. Like the smallest things can really take you out of a moment, and I think that's why everyone's so aware of it. You hear, I mean, crazy stories of actors, you know, blowing up because someone's moving in their eye line or something, and it seems so small and ridiculous to us. But when the whole room is watching you perform, and you need to be in this moment, you need to bear it all, you need to remember your continuity of where you did this, how you did this, you're connected all with the emotion. It's so massive. That one little distraction like that blows it for everyone, not just the actor. It blows it for literally everybody on set.
Mm.
So I think acting is an incredibly hard job.
No, I accept that. And I do take back my comment in that regard.
This is me defending acting.
No.
You've
got more experience on set than me, obviously.
Yes,
So it is important to see how it all harmoniously works together.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, coming back to the long days on set and the energy, it is, and it gets very hard again. Why, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, because, you know, I need to trust the people, you know, my lighting guys or grips or, you know, production design needs to trust their teams. And I think that's it. You need to kind of, they are very long days. I mean, it's great. I think what is nice is that you're in it and everyone's focused on it. Like, I never look at my phone on set, just purely because there's no time, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you're, and I think I personally, I have a mentality or energy that kind of needs that focus. I tried to be an editor once. And
I couldn't fucking do it. No.
I couldn't, like, everything was last minute and I was like, I loved it. It was great. But it was very much, I need to be present, focused, and in the moment, you know, the whole day. And once the energy's on and everyone's going, let's go, let's do this, it's a great ride. It's fucking wild. Like, and a 14-hour day can fly by in a really weird sense, you know. Yeah.
We both went to Wits, and Wits was quite great in that it let you be a little bit of everything. there was one project we had to shoot and the other project you had to edit, and I couldn't do the edit. So I was like, after 10 minutes, I was like, I think we need a break. I think we need to go out and stretch our legs. Yeah, it's like, I can't sit and go through all the footage.
I mean, I do love editing, because, and I think it's a vital skill for almost any filmmaker, if you're a director, cinematographer, you know, of how things actually come together.
Sure.
You know, it's especially like scripties, and like, there's so many people that I think could learn so much from just editing.
Yeah.
And it's the best feedback loop, you know. If something doesn't cut, if something doesn't work, you need to know why. You need to go like, oh, shit, I fucked up.
Yeah.
Or you know, and learning how it all cuts together is vital. I mean, you could have the most beautiful shot in the world, or the most emotive shot in the world, or something, and if it doesn't fit...
Yeah,
just doesn't fit, you know. But I really appreciate what editing taught me. Yeah. But I just couldn't work more than 2 days ahead of deadlines.
No, I can see how it fits into your personality of like of being there, being present, being in the moment, and having the opportunity to shut other things off. That's quite a rare job.
Yeah, but also being allowed to, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
home is LA now, hey?
Home is LA.
What's that like?
Venice Beach, baby.
Oh, cool. I spend a little time on Venice Beach.
Yeah.
It's like the freaks and geeks. Yeah. Like the crazy folk. And,
it's crazy. I love it.
It's very cool.
Keeps you on your toes.
What's that like for you?
I mean, I dig it. It's really, really cool. It's an amazing city. Very different. It's taught me a lot. Opened my eyes. It's great. It's really, really cool. I love the people there. The lifestyle is really great, also the nature and everything. But also, it's just strange to be in the middle of a city where everybody is in the film business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like everybody, the whole city, I mean, obviously an exaggeration, but...
But I know what you mean, yeah.
It's just like crazy. It's just like, you
does
know...
Does it not feel overwhelming?
It does, but also inspiring in another kind of way. It's weird.
Especially if you're working.
Yeah.
It's one thing if you're like struggling and not making it happen. But
yeah.
If you're doing what you want to do and you're keeping busy, I'd imagine it's very inspiring.
It is. I think it does the amount of people and the amount of, I mean, it's just incredible, but I think the competition gives way to collaboration. Okay. I think, because there are so many people doing it. I think in smaller environments, people get quite competitive because, you know, it's like, you know, whereas like, you know, LA, there's literally hundreds of thousands of people doing what you do.
Yeah.
So like almost the competition goes away completely. And it's just like, you end up chatting to people like, oh man, you end up chatting about films or going to watch films or like, or like you want to go shoot something random or crazy. Like it's far more like, oh, you do this because you love it. I do this because you love it. I love it. Like, let's do something cool. Like, let's just fuck it, you know, like. Which is also cool. Like, there is that element for sure.
Okay. I remember as a young impressionable musician in high school hearing I knew people that knew the members of Just Ginger.
Yeah.
And they made a move to LA.
Yeah.
To kind of give it a go.
Yeah.
Only to discover that there's as many, and I think this obviously stands to be corrected, but it was something like 10,000 operating rock bands in LA.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all. Yeah.
And operating as in like have a deal, playing shows, trying to make it a thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's the place, but it's like, it just shows you just the sheer extent of how many folks are out there.
Yeah.
You've just walked into our video store. Do you have anything to return? Have you watched something recently that you love?
Yes. Actually, Anna, the last time we chatted for coffee. I've been kind of exploring different filmmakers for different things.
Okay.
And reading in an interview, Jean-Pierre Melville, a French filmmaker in the 60s, and he's on the list of a lot of big filmmakers. Okay. They always go like, if you want to know blocking and camera movement, watch this man's work. Because
blocking is sort of how the folks or how things are sort of obstructing and not obstructing
like, you know,
the view of the camera.
Well, yeah.
Blocking, or like how things are positioned, right?
Yeah, blocking is just like how actors move around a space, essentially. Yeah. You know, like the blocking is like I don't know, your main character walks through the front door and goes to the kitchen. The other character
walks.
But
you must go that
walks,
far. You mustn't go further than that. You
yeah,
must stay
like,
here.
You know, there's a general like movement of a scene, because if two people just don't move around a set at all and just talk to each other, like, it, you know,
it can be
so
much.
You know, but it also allows movement, and you know, if someone gets annoyed and they stand up and walk towards a window, you know, that's kind of blocking. But then also, how does the camera see that? So blocking in that sense. And so I watched a few of his films.
Which are the big ones of him?
So there's one called Hombre de Arme, which is Army of Shadows.
Okay.
World War II film.
And what are we
incredible.
Talking about, era?
1960s French.
60s, okay.
Yeah. Again, I love my, one of the goals, I think, for cinematography and editing is for it to be invisible.
Yeah.
You don't really want to be sitting going, oh, wow, that was a great cut, or that's a great shot, or wow, that movement was so cool.
You've just
got to
be lost, yeah.
You just have to be in the story. And I think that's what I found when I was watching these films. And you go like, oh, wow, there's a, you know, like, I really want to watch this for the movement. Like, how does he? And then, you know, 30 minutes later, you realize you haven't even thought about it at all.
Yeah.
You're totally in this character's world, and you're like, shit, what's going to happen next? Is he going to make it out? Oh my God, he's going to kill him. Like, you know what I mean? It's and you totally get lost. And that is the point of it, I think. And that's, and he does it so well, you know.
You'd appreciate this when 1917, you know, was the Oscar film and was out in cinemas, and you could watch it in an IMAX, which was amazing. Very famously, the film is made to seem as if it's one take.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they did certain devices and they did certain things. But for the most part, it's this one shot. And of course, if you know this, you go in loving and enjoying and appreciating.
I did the exact same thing.
Oh my God, fuck, they've just managed to keep this kind of one shot going. And you love the movie because it's just a great story and characters and everything. My folks go watch it, and I'm like, and how cool is it that it's one shot? And she's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
My mom's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I was like, I just love the fact that exactly how you say you can have this very clear decision as the camera, but it can't be the be all and end all. You have to be lost.
Yes. That's, and I think that's the, as soon as you're taken out of a film, I think, you know, we're not doing our jobs properly, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the magic, is to keep that kind of, that magic, what do they call it? You know, it's beautiful. And Return from the Video Store, Jean-Pierre Marvel.
Le Samurai was also
and
one.
And then Samurai, Le Samurai, which is also great because it's such a strange mix of genres. Like, he literally did take a little bit of, like, it's very noir.
Okay.
So he mixes like kind of French cinema at the time with noir, with a bit of like samurai kind of, you know, the Japanese samurai. Like, there's a touch of that. Like, it's really great. This like lone Star Ranger, and like,
but it's not,
you know, it's amazing. It's so cool.
It's nice to go back now and listen. Mm. I mean, and see, like, you hear people talk about a great way nowadays is with, you know, Apple Music and Spotify. If you really like a band, like, go from the beginning. Just go album to album.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's such a cool way to, like, appreciate a band, because it's all there and available for you now, where before you would have to go out and buy the CDs.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the accessibility is amazing. I mean, you just go on Amazon or something, you just, like, instead of trying to track down DVDs or, you know, copies of these, like, films from ages ago, or, you know, rare films, you just download them. It's great.
I'm doing that with books at the moment. I'm kind of like reading all the books that like I should have read.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like 1985, and I read
1984.
I was born in 1985. 1984.
Yeah.
I read
Animal Farm.
Read Animal Farm recently.
Nice.
I did even like some kids' books. I read The Little Prince. I'd never read that.
Yeah. Jack Kerouac, are you into any of that?
I'm going to do Kerouac at some point.
Okay.
I don't know whether I'm quite ready for it. I want to read Catch 22 soon.
Okay.
People have been saying like that's the one to read. Mm-hmm. The screenplay for Streetcar Named Desire. So I've got Frankenstein, which
amazing.
I want to read soon because Guillermo del Toro's going to release his soon.
Dracula.
Mm.
My dad recently kind of did a reread. He said he hadn't read in years and years and years, and he said, what a great book. You've got to go read the original.
Read the original.
He says it's incredible, yeah.
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 Interesting.
Yeah.
We grew up here in Joburg, hey?
Mm-hmm.
What is a movie that came to you when you were a little kid that you loved?
So,
you have your puppy love film here at the video store. I'm curious. So, I want to get to know you now. despite being with you a couple of times a week like a decade.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think I've ever asked you what some of your favorite movies are.
So, Cool Runnings.
Lovely.
So, Cool Runnings, my brother and I watched possibly 50 times.
Yeah.
We had a VHS and we ran that thing broken. We quote it like, Sanka, you're dead, man. Mm. No, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, kiss the lucky egg. And like, I'm like, even today, like, we go like, family things is like, oh, I'm feeling very Olympic today. You know what I mean? Like, it's all these things. And I think we watched that film so many times. And I remember that being one of the first grand, like, I fucking love this shit. This is so cool.
Yeah. No, it's a great movie. And it, of course, it's got such incredible sort of values it can give you, which is, you know, you got to be yourself. You can't compare yourself to the Swiss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just be yourself. Yeah, yeah.
And own who you are.
Badass mother who don't take no crap off of nobody.
Yeah.
Standing
up for yourself.
Badass mother, don't. It's so great.
That guy came to the bioscope once.
No way, it's really.
The dude who played Yul Brynner. Yeah, I was like, so what else have you done? And he's like, you mentioned it coyly, I was in Cool Runnings. I was like, what the fuck? Which one were you? Because it's like so many years later. And I was like, oh my God, I can see this shit. Okay, then we went over in high school, we were in Greenside.
Greenside High, baby.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you were chums with Jake.
Jakey,
who's the drummer in Short Straw.
Mm-hmm.
L, who's the singer in Short Straw, was also in Greenside, but he was a bit older.
Yes.
Did you ever know L?
Vaguely.
Yeah,
so I remember watching the band they had at the time play like an open day, they called it Green Day, because of Greenside Open Day.
Yeah.
ironically, and I remember watching this band. I'm watching Ollie play drums, who's the original drummer for Short Straw, and I mean, I must have been 14 or something. Yeah. I must have been 17 or I don't know, like. Can't do the maths, but yeah, I remember Greenside. Yeah.
What was a film that came to you in high school that you that you think sort of?
Good question.
Were you like a sort of silly comedy guy?
Yeah, I mean, I love silly comedies. Like, I love stoner comedies. I want to say Superbad, but that's 2007. Okay. 2006? When was Superbad?
I forget.
I think it was past high school for me.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Could be wrong.
But it feels like a high school movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But stuff like that. I mean, Superbad. Like early stone. You know what? Actually, something that I remember watching in high school and I fucking loved, which was a Big Lebowski.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool that it came to you that early.
Yeah. I remember. Okay. It was just like fucking. Because it was like a very sort of early stoner comedy in a way, just
100%.
In a Coen Brothers style. Like
it's a frustrating movie in the best way.
Why?
Well, it's just because it's just so complicated.
Yeah.
And they just speak past each other. They never they never communicate directly to each other.
I love it. Yeah.
And John Goodman's character is so good, but he's just so annoying.
Oh,
in
man.
Like such a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
You
that's
then. Great film. Went to Wits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at Wits, what were some standout films? And I'm curious whether any of them were the same as me, because we did the same degree.
Yeah.
We
did you watched Taste of Cherry, surely.
No.
Not? Oh my God. The Iranian film.
Taste of?
Cherry.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you a Letterboxd guy?
I sure am. We should follow each other.
We should.
What's your profile name?
To be honest, I don't know. I literally just go follow a film.
Yeah.
So the director is Abbas Kiarostami, and he wrote it as well.
What
nationality is that? Iranian.
Iranian.
Yeah.
You said.
So I remember watching this, and it was the first time that I was like, "Oh wow, there's a world outside Hollywood."
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And I was like, "And it's such a beautiful film."
Yeah.
And also just. We studied it and we kind of dissected it, and it was like a cast of non-actors as well. Yeah. And I think it made the filmmaking process more accessible. I was like, wow.
I can do this.
You can do this? You can go make a film?
Yeah.
Wild. Like, you don't need...
That's what his three daughters felt like for me, watching it just last weekend, going like, this is what young filmmakers could do.
Yeah. Especially with the...
You can do this right now. This could be an apartment in Illovo.
Yeah.
Or in Linden. Because dads die from cancer everywhere in the world, not just New York.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd appreciate this. We had a screenwriting lecture at Witt's show Sideways. You know, that Paul Giamatti, Paul Thomas Anderson. I think it's Paul Thomas Anderson. He was like, this is set in the wine region of California, two buddies before the one guy gets married. This could be in Stellenbosch.
Yeah, yeah.
This could be in Cape Town.
Could be anywhere, yeah.
Could be anywhere.
Yeah. I think that's the beauty about, you know, watching films like that. You go, oh, wow, I don't need a car chase on a highway to make a good film. Like, you can have two people in a room, you know, if it's well written. I mean, Reservoir Dogs did.
Yeah.
Those are my high school films, almost all the Tarantino films. I just went full Tarantino in high school.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What is Taste of Cherry about?
It is about an Iranian father, and he drives his car in search of someone who will quietly bury him under a cherry tree after he commits suicide.
Oh, so he wants to die.
He wants to die. He wants to be buried, but his searches. I haven't watched it in a number of years. But
sure.
It is. Okay. There's some funny parts, but it's still human. It's like.
Yeah.
It was, I remember, just one of those films that just really left a mark.
Yeah, that was for me, Adversity with City of God was one of those.
Oh, huge.
Watched it. It's like one of the last lectures of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can imagine this if anyone's been to Witt's. There's the beautiful Great Hall stairs with the big pillars, and there's this big, you know, this big sort of open quad-like area. And we were the last lecture of the day, and so the sun was setting, and there was almost no one left at Witt's. And we were all walking back to our cars, which is basically across the one campus.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just watched City of God, and no one said anything to anyone. We were just like, we had every bit of like, I don't know, just shit just drained from us from watching it in a good way.
Yeah.
It just left us different.
Yeah. I think, and that's the thing, is good films change you. Good films, like, really make you think. Like, I've always been a fan of Yorgos Lanthimos. Like, I fucking love his work so much, because every time I watch one of his films, I literally wake up the next day thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it does change you. It's just like, it changes you in some way, and it gets your mind flowing on these things. And I think that is a mark of a good film, when you really just, you wake up and it like sits with you and it changes you and it makes a mark.
So Leon Fanirop, who's the well-seasoned, very respected film critic in South Africa, who's been on the show, that's his number one thing. That was one of the things I remember from film school.
Mm.
4 years in the film department, and you leave with like two major nuggets. One of them is Leon's comment that a good film leaves you different. Are you angry? Are you excited? Mm. Are you hornier? Are you frustrated?
Yeah.
The worst thing you could do is forget what you did that night. Or what you did that morning, or the movie that you watched.
Yeah,
that's the worst. That's the worst a film could ever do.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely, man.
No, it's good.
Okay, now you're starting your career. You're doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's something that kind of, we call it the film you could settle down with. This is like a kind of all-time favorite. What do you think that could be?
All-time favorite
film. Like something you could keep coming back to. It could be Cool Runnings.
I think I've watched that enough for a lifetime, but that's a tough one. There's so many films that come to mind. One of them, a film that blew me away. I watched it a couple of months ago, obviously, it's 1957, I think, is 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yes.
What
a great movie.
A film set in one room that can be that exciting and that kind of... It's a roller coaster, and it's in one room.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and again, blocking. So that is like a masterclass in blocking, like how people move. You know, how you see them, how you don't see them, how where the camera is when they speak to each other. It's who's bigger in frame, who's smaller in frame. You know.
Yes, 100%.
So,
Sydney Lumet, I think, who was a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And it's all set in a jury room.
Yep.
Where 12
jury
white men
jurors, yep.
are deciding the fate of what you come to understand to be a young, like, Latino
yes.
guy.
Yeah.
And they all walk in, and it's, you know, some of them want to get to the baseball game,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about, like, no, it seems pretty clear.
Yep.
But the jury have to unanimously decide.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do the first round of guilties and everything, everyone's guilty except one person says not guilty. And this yes. is our main character.
Yes.
Who then spends the rest of the movie slowly convincing the others.
Yes.
But how could she have seen him?
Yes.
It was dark. How could anyone look that far and mm-hmm. be able to identify the
Such
face?
Such great
and,
commentary on how we decide things.
Yeah, and our and memory and how we collectively come together as humans in good and bad ways. Mm. And slowly over the course of the movie, each person changes slowly their minds.
Yeah. But again, writing in that film is incredible.
Fuck, good.
You know,
I wonder whether, I don't know whether that was a play, because that could also be an amazing play. His three daughters wasn't a play. It was just a cool indie script for a movie.
Okay.
But I thought it might have been a play.
Oh.
Something like The Whale is a great example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of like what was a really amazing play.
Yeah. Brendan Fraser was amazing.
That then could be made into a really special movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much the whole thing, you know, takes yes. place in his apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you want to watch more of? Let me try find you something to rent.
Okay.
In our video store. Okay. What are you in the mood for?
Good classics. What you trying to do with books, I'm trying to do with films as well. Like, I'd really love to go, like, you know, and I have been doing that to a degree. Recently redone it with all of Kubrick's film, like Barry Lyndon is, what a film.
I haven't seen it.
Have you not seen Barry Lyndon?
No, it's also on my list.
You just got to go, you've got to go do Kubrick. And then
There was a film we watched in lockdown. You'd love this.
Yeah.
So myself and Cole hunkered down for level 5 lockdown.
Yes.
And we were two film student, filmy folk.
Yes.
We're stuck with nothing to do. So we watched a lot of movies. And we gave ourselves weeks. We were like, this week is Korean filmmaker week. And we watched you know, Memories of Murder and all these cool movies.
Yeah.
In the Mood for Love. And some of them were rewatches. Also, it was like, let's watch all the movies we need to watch.
Yeah.
We did a film noir week. There's an early
amazing
Kubrick. It's a black and white film called The Killing. The Killing?
The Killing?
That's worth
not, it. Not Dr. Strangelove.
No, that's cool.
Yeah. Because it's not a war film, right?
No.
I'm thinking of is Paths of Glory. Who is that? Has that really, really long tracking shot in the trenches, which is something like the longest tracking shot before 1917 or something like that. It's broke some record.
I think it's called Killer's... Yeah, here we go. Killer's Kiss.
Killer's Kiss. I did not see that one.
1955.
Let me pull up my letterbox and add it on.
No. Okay. No, it's called The Killing.
Oh, yes.
Black and white, noir. Mm. Kubrick. Yes, look at us. Look at us go. Deep dive.
Deep dive.
Yeah, The Killing. It's what I can recommend to you.
Okay, it's on. Added it. Done. Beautiful, okay. Nice.
Magic.
Yeah.
So
what film are you... Is that the one I'm going to rent? The Killing?
I think that should be one of them.
Okay.
I would have recommended 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yeah.
But you beat me to it and you watched it.
Oh, that's amazing.
What have you got coming up?
I've got, funny enough, a commercial in Cape Town.
Yay.
Yeah, so I'll be in Cape Town next month shooting a commercial. I can't say much more, unfortunately. It is fun. It's going to be a big job, which would be quite cool. Many days in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Staying at Mount Nelly, so it makes it all okay.
Is that what you call it?
The Nelly.
Mount Nelly.
Yeah, just the Nelly, staying at the Nelly.
Oh, that's lovely. Who insists that you stay there?
Is
that
production.
Okay.
I don't insist it.
Okay. It's just nice. It's fucking nice.
Yeah. There's a pillow menu.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
And the breakfasts are so good.
Oh, It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's good to have you back, man.
Oh, dude, thank you so much for this. This has been amazing.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Let's
send some more film recommendations. You know what I like to do is start a little film club. That's what I've been trying to do. It doesn't have to be a lot of people, 4 or 5 people. You watch a film and you have a chat about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. What do you think of this? Just to hear other perspectives of how people experience films, you know?
Yeah. No, that's
been wanting
good
to do. Have you watched the new, talking about Yorgos Lanthimos, have you watched his new one?
Kinds of Kindness.
Yeah.
I started it.
What do you mean you started it?
I know.
Didn't finish it?
Well, so I would have watched it in cinema.
Yeah.
It never came to cinemas in South Africa.
Yeah.
But what I love about this is that cinema can force you to watch a movie from start to finish.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously loved Poor Things. We screened that here at the Bioscope.
I
love the fact that it was my first, like, DCP upgrade film. Mm. Perfect film for the Bioscope.
Yeah.
And then when I saw Poor Things had come to Disney Plus, I, like, just watched a few more scenes of it. And I was like, it doesn't slap the same on a TV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's such a cinematic thing.
Cinema is a very special place.
And then what I love is that, like, a cinema forces you to sit there and concentrate and watch and be present, sort of, as you said. Where,
and it's a shared experience, too.
Yeah. I started watching Kinds of Kindness, and I was like, it's slow. It's like, it's very cryptic. It doesn't hold your hand through anything.
I haven't seen it yet, so I didn't give anything away. I got a bit distracted,
and I was like, okay, it's a tough movie. It's very arty.
I love it. That's what I love about his films. They're so great and so different.
Yeah, but something like Poor Things was a huge, bold, creative swing, but it was very accessible as well because it was quite funny. It was quite easy to sort of follow. Mm. Kinds of Kindness is lacquer artier.
Oh, I love it. Weird. Deep cunts.
Weird. Oh, no.
Deep cunts.
It's deep cunts.
All right.
Magic.
Thank you, Paul.
Dude, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for popping in.
Sweet. Video store.
Cheers.
Bye.
All right. What a lekker chat.
Oh, Tommy boy. The bubbles.
The bubbles. Let's explain that. Let's explain that to people. So Short Straw is a band of 5 of us, and Tom famously didn't do much speaking.
Or singing.
He
just never had a mark.
He's the most incredible musician, like the most incredible, naturally gifted guitarist, but not necessarily a good singer. Listen, I'm not the greatest singer, but I'd do the occasional backup. But Tom never really sang. But there was one show at Rocking the Daisies.
The one that's recorded and on YouTube.
Yes, where Tom, for some reason, had a microphone in front of him. So he took advantage of that. On the side of the stage, they were sending out these bubbles into the crowd. And I think Tom was quoting Finding Nemo, I think.
Maybe.
But the only thing he ever said on the microphone out loud in about 12 or 13 years of being in our band was, "I love the bubbles." And we always made fun of him for that. And I think that also compounded the anxiety for him to not speak more in the band.
Probably. But I mean, who doesn't love the bubbles?
Who doesn't love the bubbles? But no, it's great. It's great catching up with Tom. It was great hearing these films that he loved because, as I said, we've been next to each other. We've been in the same car. We've been in the same plane venue for over a decade together. But I never knew what his favorite films were.
Let me guess: Bubble Boy, The Bubble, The Boy in the Plastic Bubble.
No.
How many more movies with bubble are there?
But yeah, I want to know what you thought of The Bachelors.
That was great. It was kind of like, what do you call the sport? Hot shots.
Yeah. So what we did is, it was actually inspired from our episode with Nick Hammond. He was talking about his affiliation with golf and how he's this Sunshine Tour in Dorsey. And then I think it actually happened off the mics when he reminded me that Hot Shots exist, which is like a gamified version of the driving range at World of Golf here in Johannesburg. And I've done this once where I was getting new irons, you know, which are the clubs, the steel clubs that you use. And they have this technology now. I don't even know where or how it exists.
It's magic, Russell.
But they, when I was testing my irons, they were seeing exactly how far I hit, where I hit, the curve. Every sort of part of my hit was being analyzed for scientific reasons.
Mm.
And then someone must have gone, and I'm sure this didn't take very long, they must have gone, oh my God, we could fucking gamify this. We could turn this into a game.
Yeah.
So it almost felt like we were tempin bowling. So Nick let me know this. He reminded me that this existed. And then I thought, my diverse group of friends, and it's very diverse. Some of you guys are like the movie nerds who perhaps don't do a lot of sport. And then I've got some friends that play golf like once a week. I also look to my dad, who plays a lot of golf, my future father-in-law, who plays a lot of golf, and my nephew, who is a little boy who's starting to play a lot of golf. So I thought this could actually be fun and a cool idea. So I suggested it to my best man, who is Kyle, a good friend of mine, and Alistair, the singer of Short Straw. And so they coordinated it. And I thought it was lots of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I was actually thinking about it. I don't think I've even hit a ball at a driving range before. Like, I've played putt-putt. It's the only contact I've had with club and ball. So this was, yeah, just pretty much going to all the guys who are apparently really good and going, hey, give me a tip quick. What is that?
Yeah, I think the majority of us weren't great golfers. So there was a fun, a little bit like temp and bowling. There's like there's always the one gutter balls. And so it was lots of fun. So it was great to have you.
Yeah, so the one mate was like, keep your left arm straight. The other guy was, it's all in the hips. That's all I remember from that Adam Sandler movie.
And then it was nice because you got to meet some of the other people who are going to be at the wedding.
Yeah.
And so the wedding is early November. And so I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think the video store might take a little break around November, early November, because of the wedding, because of honeymoon. But we will then be back.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well-deserved break.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've been clapping it every week for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And loving it, absolutely loving it. So that's very important to mention. But sometimes just these personal moments just take over. And it's nice just to give it a bit of a breather. But let's talk a little bit about movies just for a secchi. What are you, or series, what are you watching at the moment? Or trailers, or what did you want to chat about?
So I saw this trailer for this documentary called Kim's Video.
Okay.
Apparently, it looks like it's on Amazon, but this movie looks insane. Apparently, this guy, Mr. Kim, had this video store, I can't remember, some small town in America, and at one point he had up to 50,000 VHSs.
Wild.
A huge majority of which were bootleg.
Okay.
And apparently there were some movies in there that like didn't exist anywhere else. I don't know where this guy got this stuff. And they were infamous, like the FBI would come in and just take rows of movies, the bootleg ones, and then within a few days he'd made new ones.
Okay.
So at some point when he saw the end was coming, he decided to digitize all of the videos.
Okay.
So for some reason they sent them to Italy to get done there. So what I can tell from this documentary, well, from this trailer, is that the movies got to Italy and then nothing happened to them. Like the process didn't happen. So this documentary is kind of about this crew who get a whole bunch of people together, go to Italy to try to find these tapes to break them out to save them.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, how nuts does that sound?
Yeah, I think when you've got such a unique person who's created this unique collection, you see these kinds of documentaries all the time where, you know, someone's dedicated their life to something and that it's worth making this film about it, telling their story.
Yeah.
Okay, Kim's Video.
Kim's Video.
And it's on Amazon, you believe?
This is on Amazon, yeah. Okay. I haven't watched it yet.
All right, cool. Yeah. Magic, man.
Yeah, and then okay. I finally saw Beetlejuice.
Nah.
I did not think I was going to like it as much as I did.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a solid movie. We spoke about this. It delivers.
It wasn't like over-sentimental like the Ghostbusters sequels and just up its own arse. It was so goofy and as stupid as the first movie.
Yeah, I think some people now who perhaps don't have a relationship with the first one thought it was like a cash grab. But they hadn't seen or really experienced the first one.
Yeah.
So they couldn't really legitimately feel how it's moved on. But there was enough reports from people that indicated that Tim Burton really was having a good time and was loving it.
Yeah.
And was faithful with a lot of practical effects. And
yeah, the small sets were great. Like I watched a video last night, kind of a review on it. And they were saying how a lot of Tim Burton's previous movies is just this vast expanse, like in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you just see it, like you can't see the end of the factory. And
yeah, where he was using a lot of CGI as opposed to a practical effect.
But there's like the hell, the kind of afterlife in those small rooms, you could just feel the claustrophobia again. Like they kept that element, which I loved.
No, it was a solid movie. It was really good. Magic, man.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it was lekker hanging out with you.
Yeah, Risky.
What a nice day.
Yeah.
And we'll see you down the road.
Down the road.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for listening. And our home base is thevideostore.co.za. There are links to previous episodes. And as mentioned, this is a tool of a interview where I really think we can help people see all the different aspects of the film industry.
I used to be a runner for about 7 years.
You keep telling us.
No, I learned nothing.
You learned nothing. No, but there is just so much. And I mean, I'm testament to that too, where I went into film school and like everyone, I wanted to be the next Tarantino. But I realized, what's the point in all of us making movies if there's no place to show it? So myself and Daryl, my good friend at the time who was next to me in film school, we had these dreams to start a cinema. And here we are 14 years later. So there's a lot available to you. And the film industry is an incredible industry that employs every single facet. That was something that we also learned on the video store with the guest Denim Richards, who reminded me that every single industry is employed by the film industry, from animal wrangling to law to catering to costume to
set building,
production, finance. It's astounding. So
yeah,
it's nice to share that with everyone, and I hope everyone enjoyed that chat with Tom and our little chit chat now. All right.
Okay.
Cheers, Getty.
Cheers.